Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Spotlight On. Today we're sitting down with Liam Cunningham of Nat Geo's The Hot Zone. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hi Liam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing remarkably well. A delight to be here.
Welcome back to Spotlight On. I'm Carolina Benetti, sitting down with Liam Cunningham, and we're going to talk all things for National Geographic's The Hot Zone. So for those viewers tuning in who want to know more, how did you get involved with The Hot Zone and what is it?
Well, The Hot Zone is a reference to a terrible place where a virulent disease or virus is, and it's an extremely, in other words, it's hot. I think the phrase is also used in military terms as well, where something is incredibly dangerous. However, what we have is a true story. That happened in 1989 when the horrific disease of Ebola was released and unleashed 10 miles from the White House in Washington. The scary thing is it may look like a throwback to an earlier period of over 30 years ago, but the reality of the situation is that as we speak today in Central Africa, the second worst outbreak of Ebola is happening as we speak.
That's insane.
It's very, very scary. And the wonderful people at Nat Geo, and we all know from National Geographic that they have an extraordinary connection with the scientific world and the natural world. And it just seemed like a perfect place to be doing a six-part drama. So when they contacted me, I was more than happy to do it. Also, I got instructions from my wife and my daughter because the wonderful Juliana Margulies was involved. And as soon as I told them, they just looked at me and said, "You're doing it." They love that woman. And they're quite right. She's just an extraordinary woman.
So they came on set to visit Juliana, right?
No, they didn't come to set at all because I filmed for 3 months with Juliana in Toronto.
Okay.
So I live in Dublin in Ireland. So they didn't get a chance to come over and say hello. But that doesn't matter. They were just telling me it didn't matter that they were getting a chance to meet her or not. They just wanted me to be working with her.
That was awesome, and you loved working with her.
She's a fantastic woman. You're not that long in this business, and you know her success rate is extraordinary, from ER to obviously The Good Wife and all those sort of things. You don't stay and become and stay as successful as Juliana is unless you got stuff to back it up.
Yeah.
And she does. She's a joy to work with.
And now, besides working and being in Canada for it, how did the project initially come about for you?
Well, I suppose it was through the normal channels, through my agent, and when I was sent the script and this. It's just a really interesting character.
Did you have to audition or did they request you?
They requested me, yeah.
Congratulations.
Listen, I've been a long time in this game. It's normally you have to work like a dog to get a part, but it was very nice to be requested to be involved in the show.
No, but you know, when I was watching it, because usually, you know, they're really kind and they send me the series. I usually watch the pilot episode and then do the interview. I binged the whole thing.
Wow. We can't ask for a higher compliment than that.
The germaphobe in me was like, what happens next? Are they going to touch people? Is it going to touch things? I was hooked.
It's kind of weird. When we were wearing those, you saw those horrible hazmat suits we were wearing. And when you take them off and when you're sweating and all sorts, that you do actually, you're really careful with your hands and with your, it's a scary thing. It's a weird headspace to enter into.
Oh man, did you feel claustrophobic in it?
Man, you have no idea. And I was lucky. There was only those kind of three levels of suits. I got to wear the first two, the white one at the beginning. I think the first time you see us, these white, they're kind of forensic-like suits. When we put those on, I thought that would be the easy one. And that was like in 10 minutes, we were dripping in sweat, both myself and Juliana. I went under those orange suits, but she and a couple of others had to wear these horrific blue, like, you know, that nothing gets in. But I think they weighed something like 60 pounds and they were like horrific, absolutely
Wait,
horrific.
Wait, how heavy were your suits that you were wearing?
Nowhere near that. But it was very difficult because there's fans on them and we needed fans to obviously stop them getting condensation and the suits had to be blown up. They have to be negative pressure to make sure nothing gets in. So and then you had to act on top of that, and use props and gloved up and taped. It wasn't a pleasant way to shoot for a day. But listen, the real folks, the real heroes of these kind of stories are the people who have to wear this in kind of 110 degree heat in the Congo and places like that. I mean, we weren't going to get injured if those suits breached, but these people, it's a life and death with them.
Absolutely. And this is also based on a book.
Yeah, Richard Preston's book, called The Hot Zone, which came out around that time and caused a lot of ripples. But his book is even more important now.
Did you read it before going into the series?
No, I tend to avoid reading them because I don't want the ideas of the author getting into my head when the script is my Bible.
Yeah.
I get into enough trouble from George or Martin for not reading his books. I try and avoid them because they're not necessarily required for what I've been asked to do.
Sure.
I don't see it as an escape or anything. I need to concentrate on the bits between page one and the last page of the script.
Absolutely.
Without being distracted by what's in the books.
Well, also the show deviates a lot. And almost always, 99% of the time on TV and film, it deviates from the book. So it does kind of take away from the main story.
They're two different animals, basically.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
My biggest question was, did you have to go back and ADR all the scenes where you're in the costume? How did they get sound in there?
It was pretty tricky. There was some to do.
You mentioned the fan, and I was like, wait, how did that work for sound?
It wasn't pleasant for the sound people. I think they were despairing occasionally. But we tended to take the volume up. Well, the difficulty was hearing your fellow actors listen for your cues, because they were trying to overcome the sound that they had. And then we had to...
Could you guys not hear each other?
Occasionally, it was very tricky. Yeah. Not the most pleasant way to do your day's work of acting.
Man, that's a good insider tip, though. You couldn't even hear. Talk about like.
Speak
really,
up, yeah. That's the insider tip.
Also, really. Speak up. But I was thinking like body language, like really knowing what the cues are and where to pick up on what's going on because of the physicality.
Yes, absolutely. That's where rehearsal is essential. So you get at least some sort of. Form of the dance of a scene, you know. So.
And now, important. Did you have to stack any of the episodes, or how was filming? Did you get to do chronological in this case?
No, not all the time. We broke them up into. There was some obvious unchronological stuff when we had to go to South Africa as well. So we filmed for most of the month of December. And that's the flashback sequences which come in and out of more or less each episode. So they obviously had to be done together and then fed back into chronologically into the show.
I will say for people that tune in and they watch the pilot that your opening scene, because you're not in the pilot a terrible amount.
Correct.
But you're in the rest of the show tremendously.
Yeah.
But it struck me as Old Man in the Sea.
there's a bit of the Hemingway feel of it, I suppose.
Yeah, it hit me hard with all the Hemingway vibes.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful location we were on, one of the gorgeous lakes outside near Hamilton or near Toronto, anyway. And it was, oh God, I would have loved that house we were filming at. It was just so gorgeous on the lake and this little jetty. It was very difficult to drag me away from that set at the end of the days.
Maybe you should look into buying it. It could be like your retirement home one
day.
You
can't buy it. It's a weird thing. They're all family owned and they're not allowed to build on it. And it's been in families for generations. The whole series of houses. It's a protected area. It's really lovely. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really cool that you guys got to film there.
Yeah, it certainly is.
So I was going to ask next what your favorite location was to film, but it sounds like it was this house.
No. My favorite location was South Africa. We were 2 hours on the East Coast because I've filmed a lot of... Many times in Cape Town, which is kind of the south west coast, but this was on the east coast, about 2 hours north of Durban. We obviously needed something that looked like the rainforest, the Congo. And because of the facilities and the wonderful crews that they have in South Africa, we had to shoot there. So 2 hours, which is close to Swaziland and Mozambique, we had these incredible locations. Not horrifically far from our hotel, which was great. And we filmed in this with these locals and also people that we'd got some very serious people from the Congo. And you remember the healer, the faith healer, the shaman?
Yes, yes. I love that scene. Heartbreaking.
He was in the original village that this outbreak happened. He is the real
from
deal.
From 89?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He is actually further than that. I think late 70s when the flashbacks happened.
So he is
from that, absolutely from that area where it all kicked off. And he was the most beautiful man, fluent in, I can't tell you how many languages, English, French, obviously two or three languages from the Congo, an educated man and never acted before.
He was terrific.
Phenomenal man. Really, really sweet
wow,
man.
What a how did they find him?
I'm not too sure. I think one of the technical guys that I may have been associated with the production and the production design, I think he hunted the guy down. He was from the Congo. So this is what I loved about Nat Geo, that they were trying to get this as technically and factually correct as they possibly could, to the extent that they brought this guy, you know, who's, you know, originally from Congo, this older man, and he was sometimes the best work he can do is working with people who've never done it before, because they don't have any bad habits. They're fresh, and it's a wonderful thing.
I'm blown away. I had no idea he hadn't acted before. He seemed like a seasoned pro.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's sickening, isn't it? We're breaking our back trying to look good over the years, and the guy walks in and knocks it out of the park. I love it.
You knocked it out of the park as well.
Well, I try it. They make me look good. The editors and the music people and the writers. I know.
Could you imagine walking around life with like an orchestra? I always thought that, like, if I had one choice of like a movie bit, I'd leave everything else behind. Just have like a really enthusiastic orchestra to like play behind me. Like,
it'd be
high
great.
Notes, sad notes.
Yeah, they could back you up. I'm going out. Dun, dun, dun. You could have that in the background. A lot of strings and stuff. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be great. The soundtrack of my life. There they are. There's the soundtrack of my life. This 100-piece orchestra walking behind me.
Perfect. That's a dream.
Yeah.
And now for everybody that's been listening and wants to see what we're talking about, we actually have an exclusive clip for you from The Hot Zone.
All workers quarantined.
We don't have the authority.
Nothing ever changes, does it? So we have potential exposure risks walking around D.C.
That's what I've been trying to tell them.
Okay, we need to find a way to shut that down, get these workers contained. When are we heading out?
Now. I just need to talk to Tucker first.
You haven't told anyone you've contacted me?
They need you. They just don't know it yet.
Story of my life.
I suppose I should put that in a bit of context. That's the first time she's called him in and he's been avoiding her, deleting her messages and... because he's been kind of sidelined as a bit of a crank and a kook and whatever, even though he's come across this in Africa. But he's kind of lost his shine because he's very passionate about what he does and he's not particularly academic and scientific, even though he's an expert. So she's basically just got a hold of him and he's coming along to say, yeah. So she's just rolling it out there and then decides to tell him that she hasn't told anybody else. So already we're in a bit of drama.
You cause a lot of drama walking in there.
I do. Well, he's Juliana's mentor from years and years ago, yeah.
And what's interesting, too, is that they show you with another character who's your partner in Africa, and you're also at odds with one another.
Yes, we're noticing a pattern. Yes, the wonderful James Darcy, who I've... worked with a number of times. He's a great guy. Yes, he is. When we meet him in the so-called present day in 1989, there's great animosity, and through the flashbacks, we find out why.
Do you know? I watched the flashbacks, and I was on your side. I didn't really get why he was angry.
Well, no, you do. Well, there's a reason for that. If you look at what my character actually does, it's like so against what the done thing is. And especially with the faith healer and all that. So for them that are sticklers to systems and the way to do things and procedure and all that. And
basically overrated.
Yeah. And undramatic. So he's a bit of a, as they say in the old action movie things, he's a bit of a loose cannon.
Yes, you are. But that's what makes the show so delightful.
Yeah. Well, delightful wouldn't be a word that I'd use. But it's an incredibly interesting story. And it's not often you get to do kind of a thing that was based 40 years ago. And at the same time, it's never been more timely. And that's kind of the interesting thing with it as well.
And now working with National Geographic, did you guys have scientists and stuff on hand as well? I know that this is on the theatrical side, but yeah. I'm just wondering because they have such an extensive team.
Yeah, well, they do. I mean, you have to remember that this kind of the Center for Disease Control and chasing down emerging diseases and all that is very specialized. So they obviously had Richard's book. They talked to people. Juliana had met Nancy Jacks as well. You're kind of treading a fine line. The scientific world, by its very nature, has to be almost has to be boring. In other words, it has to do with experiments and test tubes and petri dishes and let's re-look at our systems and how we did things. And so it's not the most, it shouldn't be the most interesting thing on the planet. It's procedural and everything else. But what we have to do when you're trying to get this story across, we have to make it dramatic. Otherwise, people just yawn and switch off. So you're treading a fine line between getting this drama out and at the same time being true to the events that actually happened at the time. So what you try and do, it with honour, without trying to fool anybody or patronise them or be condescending. So that's what you try and do, and you have to be able to defend it and have to be able to tell a story, you know. So those things are incredibly important to that's where our kind of responsibility lies, I suppose.
Gotcha. And now for people who tune in, who want to get into acting or are interested in it, I know this is a question, time old question, everybody always asks it, but what advice would you give to like nascent actors who are looking to get in and want to get their foot in the door? Because you also direct.
Yeah, I've done a bit. Well, I directed TV a number of years ago. I did that for about four years or so. And I loved it. I loved the directing thing. You get to play with all of the toys. And it also helped me as an actor. I loved the whole thing with editing and putting music on. And I learned more how to use... for a long time I rode on my instincts, and if I deliver the truth of a scene, that's enough. It is enough. But when you realise that part of your toolkit is your actor personal toolkit is the camera, and you can use that, in a lot of ways to assist you with your performance.
Could you clarify that for people who don't understand?
Well, you have to remember, okay, in a simple terms, if somebody is talking...
I'm picturing kids at home who've never had to act opposite a camera and are listening and they want the advice. Like,
well, in the very simple sense, the story of a wide shot, if somebody's talking to you and you evidently have to use your whole body because your whole body's in shot. And if you're doing a close-up, it's just your head. Mm-hmm. So you reduce your performance. It doesn't take away from the intensity of what you're doing or the truth of what you're doing. But if we were doing a scene here and the audience knows you're lying and you're about to tell this lie to me, then we're not going to go back to a big wide shot of you telling this lie. We want to see what's on your face. That's where our interest is going to be. We want to see your eyes as you're telling the lie. Is it hurting you to tell the lie? Are you happy to be doing it? Are you playing with the person opposite? So that close-up thing would be a lot more important than the camera being in the furthest corner of the room. It wouldn't have the same intensity. So if you keep in mind and talk to your directors, if you're lucky enough to be working, and just say, look, where's the shot for this particular... And that's what... You have to include the position of the camera. The position of the camera is a huge part of your performance.
There you go.
And as regards the advice for the up-and-coming actors, let me give you the best good news. I didn't start acting until I was 29. So if I can do it, and I was an electrician, I'd like to refer to myself as I used to be a real person. And at 29, I started doing it, and it didn't matter how many people were attempting to stop me. I loved doing it so much that there was just no way they were going to stop me. I loved doing it. I never thought of it as a thing for a method of getting food, paying my bills or anything like that. I loved the idea of the problem solving, of making something believable, of making it entertaining, and the idea of getting a story across. And everything kind of follows after that, if you're lucky. I've been doing it. Most of your listeners, viewers, whatever you want to call them, are would be, you know, up to recently, but would have been blissfully unaware of me. And it's Game of Thrones that's kind of got my name out there. I was having a great time for 25 years as a strolling player. I've done really varied roles and done all sorts of things because I love acting. I kind of have to act. When actors say to me, I want to be an actor, and I said, let me stop you there, that's exactly the reason not to do it.
Yeah.
If you have to be an actor, that's the only reason to do it.
Yeah.
It's because it's a stupid idea, a stupid thing to do, to be an actor.
You will never have job security in your entire
life.
No,
absolutely not. I've had it for the last 5 or 6 years. Now my accountant is gone into a major depression because Game of Thrones is finished. but it's a lovely thing, and for an actor, security's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You kind of, as my mother used to say, hunger.
It makes you complacent, I think.
It makes
right?
you comfortable.
Yeah.
Which makes you complacent. Yeah. But my mother used to say, hunger is a great sauce.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to use that, Liam.
It's a great, you can
good
have
one.
That.
I'm going to take it. Hunger is a great sauce.
Yeah.
You can say it like menacing. You can
yeah,
say
you
funny.
Can do anything. You can it's be great. Filthy with it if you want. Yeah.
And now also for directing, you mentioned that you did some TV directing in the past and you loved
yes.
it.
Yes.
Would you ever return to it?
I may do. I may have set the wheels in motion to direct something.
I'm so excited.
Well, I can't go into it yet because we haven't secured anything yet. But so it would be unfair. But I'm aiming to do that again.
I'm sending all the positive fairies.
Oh,
along
please
your path.
Do send positivity. It's useful.
Carry it again, around.
Put those lucky leprechauns in my pocket.
All of them.
There's a portion of me doesn't want to do it.
Why?
Because of the amount of work involved, the amount of commitment involved,
has to work.
I know, but acting is great because you just pop in and everybody thinks you're wonderful and you disappear and the poor crew is there every night and freezing to death and are paid less and everything. It's such wrong. It's so wrong. But the amount of commitment involved when you're directing something and when you're trying to get something off the ground, which may never happen, there's a huge amount of workload involved. And it's one of those ones that the story, I just kind of went, I don't want anybody else to do that. I think I know what it needs. Oh, God, I'm going to have to do it.
It's your story.
It's not my story, but...
when it speaks to you that way,
exactly.
It's your story.
Yes. Yeah, there is a bit of that. It's not that I'm complacent about it, because what I'm worried about is that once it gets going, I'm going to be like a dog with a bone. I'm going to have to stick with it, and it's going to destroy me probably in all sorts. But
the best kind of destruction.
So dramatically.
No, the best kind of destruction.
Very much so. Yeah. It is the best kind of it, and I consider myself a storyteller. So
now, if you do direct this and it comes to fruition, which knock on wood, it will. Yeah. Will you also be in it? Or are you going to
You know, I haven't decided that front yet. Again, I'm thinking of workload. A lot more work. If I do decide to be in it, it'll be because it's unavoidable, not because I'm trying to put myself in it. So we'll see.
Yes, you made it very clear. Minimal workload.
Yes, I'm trying to get a minimum amount of work. Yeah.
And aside from Nat Geo, you also have a movie coming out.
No, not coming out. I'm about to start.
Oh.
Or maybe I do have a
IMDb
movie coming out.
IMDb lied to me.
Which one is it?
It said it was filmed already.
Way Down. Is this the Way Down?
Yeah.
No. They've already started filming. That's in Madrid. I run from this gorgeous city on Friday, land in Dublin on Saturday where I live. I get a whole day with my family and watch the penultimate episode of that thing I might be in as well. And then Monday I fly to Madrid. So I'm doing a bank heist movie starting on Wednesday.
Oh, well, that's a romp.
Oh, we love the bank heist movie. How can you not love it? It's great.
So what is this character? This is so fun. You're getting to play so many different characters. Yeah. You've got like a Hemingway-ish type grumpy man in the hot zone.
Yeah.
Although, I guess Sir Davos is kind of a Hemingway-ish type grumpy man.
Yeah, well, he's not that grumpy. He's very, very positive kind of a character. He's a very lovely, lovely man. But the
he
movie
was really lovely with Shireen. I don't know about.
Oh yeah, that was lovely. Yeah, that wasn't grumpy. It wasn't grumpy with
Shireen. No, that's what I'm saying. Is you weren't grumpy with her. She taught you to read.
She did. God bless her.
Congratulations, by the way. It was great to see you learn to read on screen.
Tricky to do when you know how to read, and then you're trying to pretend you don't know how to read. It's kind of it messes with your head when you're acting that stuff.
Oh, interesting. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, huh. It's weird. It's very strange.
Well, so back to the hot zone. So then you played, your current character.
Yes.
And now for a bank heist, what type of character? Are you a villain? Like,
Well, technically I'm a villain, but you can never think you're playing a villain when you're playing a villain.
Is there a dragon?
No, it's sort of modern-ish day Spain. I'm the mastermind of the gang who are stealing the Bank of Spain.
Ocean's 11.
It was a bank heist, but then you could say Ocean's 11 is like How to Steal a Diamond and Four Easy Lessons, and there's always been bank heist movies, or heist movies. Freddie Highmore. Do you know the lovely Freddie Highmore, mm-hmm. good doctor in
Bates
Motel?
I don't know him personally, but yes.
He's the kind of main man in it. We've Famke Janssen and Sam Riley and a director from Barcelona. So we're looking forward to it. Very much looking forward to it. They're already up and running.
Those are going to be gorgeous locations. Are you excited? Have you filmed in Spain before?
Oh, we've filmed. We filmed Game of Thrones in Spain.
You did?
We did many times.
I
both ends.
Out in Belfast and stuff.
80% of it in Belfast, but we do Croatia, Iceland, and Spain as well as. What was it, Malta and North Africa in the earlier seasons? All over.
Very cool. You guys have gotten to go around the world. What was your favorite place to film on Game of Thrones, location-wise?
Ooh, location-wise. Well, do you remember the big meet-up with all the main players on that stage?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, last season. Yeah, absolutely. It was epic. Dragons.
Yeah, all that. Yes, when they were climbing down and she hopped off. You're late. All that stuff, yeah. That is a place called Italica, which is the second biggest Roman Colosseum outside the one in Rome. So where we were filming,
that was real. It wasn't CGI.
No. Some of the tops were just they extended what was there.
But they didn't put that in the talk back.
No, did they not? Well, they should have. Yes, it was embellished by CGI, but that is real. Where we were acting, thousands of people died.
Well, that's depressing. It went from making it seem grand and amazing to really depressing.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
It's my story of my life. It's Hemingway-esque. Is that a word?
Yeah. Hemingway is a verb. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good.
And so now, after you've worked on this, how do you feel affected for the hot zone, like learning about, did you know about Ebola before you came on? Like, were you familiar with its like history or...
Yeah, I was a bit. I used to live in Africa. So
you did?
I lived there for 3.5 years. Yeah.
When?
In the 80s, in the middle, before you were born, darling.
I was born in the 80s.
Oh, don't lie. Late 90s, I would have said.
No.
Yeah, I lived there for 3.5 years. As I said, I used to be a real person. I used to do rural high voltage electrification and stuff like that.
That makes it sound like you were electrocuting people.
I nearly electrocuted myself a couple of times, but that's neither here nor there.
Maybe that's why you left.
It probably was self-preservation. Yeah. But I also do a lot of work with refugees and stuff. So I've been to Uganda and South Sudan, the world's youngest country.
Who do you work with for the refugees?
Over here, I used to do a bit with the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, which was started by Einstein.
I didn't know that either. I'm just learning so much from you today.
There you go. I'm a mentor. I can't help it. The people I work with now, wonderful people at World Vision, which are one of the biggest, and they're American. They're wonderful, wonderful people. And I've been to Jordan to advocate on behalf of the Syrian refugees, and I've done that's the South Sudan and not Uganda. So I continue to work for them. Hence, I know about the Ebola thing, all that, because it's a scary time in the life of Africa, as they say. So,
man,
yes.
Africa has a lot on its hand.
Yes, it always does.
Between all the small warlords and the diseases, it's difficult.
It's very tricky. Very tricky.
When you got this script,
yes.
What was it that was, besides your wife and daughter telling you you had no choice because
that was
of Juliana?
That was a part of it, definitely, yeah.
What was it that drew you to the character and to the story?
It's an extraordinary story, and it's you know, when you're reading on one hand this Ebola outbreak, which is on, you know, page 7 of your newspaper, when this is a possible pandemic that could wipe the entire species out, and we're being rather complacent about it, when it's a plane ride away from hitting us in the face. And the evidence is this story, where this particular less lethal form of Ebola was unleashed 10 miles from the White House, as I said. So for us to try and attempt in our own small way to kick this story from page 7 to
the front page,
if possible, especially with what's going on there, I think is at least a civic duty. And I always thought artists have a certain responsibility to hold a mirror up to society. So, and I don't mean that from a holier than thou position. I think
we need to do that. No, art has always been a mirror.
But we need to do that in an entertaining form. We're storytellers, so we told it in the form of this story.
That's very well done.
That's very, very kind of you.
I'm telling you, I binged the whole thing. I couldn't stop. It was like 4
cool.
a.m. and my eyes burned, and I was like, I can still.
I can still do it. That's great. Well, we can't ask for a higher praise than that. That's brilliant.
No, it was really great. So we know that you possibly might be directing.
Very early days, very early days.
Very early days. And then you're filming. How long do you anticipate filming in Europe for?
Till probably around the end of June.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Will you only be in one location in Spain, or do you think...
The whole thing takes place around Madrid. So I think the whole lot should be there. And As I said, I've filmed in northern Spain and Bilbao, and which is beautiful, and Seville, southern Spain. And I used to holiday with my family in Andalusia, close to the North African continent. So I'm a huge fan of Spain and their food and their dancing and all
Thank
sorts.
You.
They're wonderful, wonderful
Spanish,
people.
Spanish, so I'm
Is just, that right?
Yeah, I'm Spanish and Italian, so I'll just
cool.
take it. All the good food.
All the food
beaches.
Is unbelievable. And the beaches are unbelievable. The food is stunning, man. It's just the best.
So also, you're also a theater actor.
Yes, for many years, yeah.
Will you be doing any more theater? Are people going to be able to catch you in the UK?
No,
anything?
You know what? As I like to say, I stopped doing theater because my kids got used to wearing shoes.
What does that mean?
It means you don't get paid. You can't afford to buy your kids' shoes.
Oh, yeah. No, theatre does not pay.
No, it doesn't. And, I've done some series. I was a year and a half at the Royal Shakespeare Company in England, and I've done the Irish National Theatre and all sorts. I've done theatre everywhere. And I'm thoroughly guilty about not doing it, because the gym is, for an actor, is theatre. You know, you're kind of... With film and TV, a lot of the time you can be putting out fires. You're just, you know, you're juggling to mm-hmm. try and get things done. It's kind of damage limitation in a way. And then when you're doing theatre, you're kind of feeding the soul. You know, it's very important.
You're also
important.
Still putting out fires, especially if your partner forgets an entire page. And you're like, why are we picking up on page 25?
Yeah, that always happens. That always
and then
happens.
It's the improv game as you put the fire out.
Yes, with the ever widening eyes. Yeah,
a fear.
Oh yeah, yeah. I draw it on stage in Stratford at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I could not remember what was coming next, and then I compounded the problem by trying to improvise Shakespeare on stage. With my leading lady.
I wish that was taped.
Oh, God, I'm sure there's probably a record of it somewhere. That was just horrific.
Improving iambic pentameter. I'd pay to see that.
Oh, no. You wouldn't have paid to see this, I tell you. You'd be looking for your money back.
Popcorn. Just sit there with like, this is getting better. This is getting so good.
The silence is marvelous, isn't it? Shakespearean silence. The dramatic pause does not work.
Which play was it? Do you remember? As You Like It.
Yeah, that was Orlando, yeah.
What was your first play that you did with the Royal Shakespeare Company?
That's the one. That's what they brought me up for that season.
And they brought you back?
They haven't asked me back. They blocked me. No, I'm only kidding. I did a year and a half, and I did in Stratford and then down to the Barbican in London. It was a wonderful time. I did another play there, which is the reason I went, called The Herbal Bed, which is a remarkable, beautiful piece of writing. So, Yeah, yeah. The As You Like It thing was rather mediocre. I'd rather see something appalling than I can live with appalling.
You just
and
made
great.
It sound like it was appalling. So
no, it wasn't
it
appalling.
Been
it was
fantastic.
Mediocre. Which is worse, as far as
I'm sure it wasn't as bad as you're saying it is.
Well, possibly not.
I doubt it. But they kept you.
They did.
Yeah. They kept you.
No, it's not me. I was marvelous. No, I'm kidding.
So, is there a play or a character that you haven't done yet in theatre that you would like to do?
No, not really. I'm not. It's kind of weird. I'm not really drawn to. Oh, it's my turn to play such and such, and you know, there's. I to be honest with you, I'd prefer to do a new play than an older one. I just think you just get some lazy criticism where they're just comparing it to the last four productions that they saw, and I also complain about some directors who are doing older Shakespearean plays and want to move Macbeth up to Al Capone Chicago time, and I think so Shakespeare didn't write them well enough, so we have to put another veneer on it to give us your interpretation. Slightly arrogant, I find that. Do it like it's supposed to be done. If you have to, I'm happy enough to make a couple of cuts along the way to make the storyline a little clearer, because you know Shakespeare wrote in Shakespearean times, 16th century, 15th.
It can drag sometimes.
Yeah, it can drag. Keep it moving along. There's nothing worse than losing an audience, especially in theatre. It's difficult enough to get an audience in to see shows. You do not have the right to bore them once you've taken their money off them.
No, I feel like that's something that people should get warned about for theatre, because when I first saw Shakespeare, I grew up in New York City, I saw it properly, set in the times that it was. And then I was in, I don't remember, maybe Chicago or something, and I saw a Shakespearean production.
Yeah.
And it was set in like gangster times, the 1920s. And I was so appalled. I never got into the story because I couldn't get over the time period.
Yeah, I know. It's rotten. I have no time for that. It's arrogance. I find it's arrogance.
But I feel like they should warn people.
Yeah.
Because also, think of the people who are seeing it for the first time who've also never read the play, and they have no idea that this isn't the play.
Yeah, I know. Do it for, you know, maybe there's certain circumstances where it might work, but to, you know.
I will say I did like Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I've never saw it. The DiCaprio thing, wasn't it? Leo, I haven't seen it.
John Leguizamo is a revelation.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so great.
Yeah. Maybe I should look at that. Maybe I'll be converted to
it. It's a fun, here's the thing, is I appreciate it in film.
Yeah.
Not so much in theatre.
I know. And the wonderful thing, that's again, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but you know the way they're projecting live theatre into cinema screens now? They do it in England, and they certainly do it, yeah. They will have a live performance, and then they will digitally, you know,
No, theatre isn't meant to be seen on a TV screen.
That's exactly my...
It's no.
Yeah. The one thing that theatre has going for it is the fact that you're in the room with these people when it's happening.
It's so small that seeing it on a stage doesn't convey the performances, because it's like just watching a movie in a wide angle lens.
Yes. Yes. It's not good.
No. It makes it look mediocre.
Yeah. 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 I've got problems philosophically with that.
So you won't be doing a taped theatre performance?
No. Once it's gone, it's gone. It should be ethereal.
Do you think you would do a comedy?
I've done loads of comedies. Theatre comedy? I'd love to. I've done theatre comedies back in Dublin. I started mainly doing comedy.
Did you?
Yeah. And
Did you ever do stand-up?
No. I'd love to do stand-up, but I don't have the cojones for stand-up.
If you ever get up the cojones, let us know. I want to see that.
No, I'm not sure you do.
It could be hilarious.
It could be appalling.
That would also make it hilarious.
Yeah, but in the wrong way. I would love to do it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today.
It's a joy. It's a pleasure talking to you.
It was great. I hope you guys all tune in for The Hot Zone on May 27th. It's going to be airing over 3 nights. It is a limited series of 6 episodes. And Liam, where can your adoring fans find you?
Oh, where can they find me? Oh, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, but I'm really not worth following.
That's not true. Follow him. I'm sure he's awesome. You guys can find me on Instagram at LenaBean113. And thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of Spotlight On.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV.
Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.